I welcome you to week number 19 of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. Today we begin chapter 2 of the book of Exodus. We meet the parents of Moshe, or Moses, the hero of our Exodus story. You remember that the current Pharaoh, whom I suspect is probably Amenhotep I, has been trying to slow down the rapid growth of the Israeli slave population. He is worried that they might rise up against the pure-blood Egyptian population. Remember that his father, Amos, was the one who pushed the foreign leaders, the Hyksos, out of the Delta and reestablished in Lower Egypt, which is the northern part of Egypt, a pure-blood Egyptian regime. And so that sort of xenophobia has no doubt been passed on to his son. And so they don't want to take chances that the Semite population, the Israeli population, might get out of hand, since they are huge in numbers. So he tries, first of all, to use the midwives that provided services to the Israeli population to just simply kill all newborn baby boys. That didn't work. And so now he has made it a religious thing. He wants all newborn boys to be sacrificed into the Nile River. And that is not going to be complied with by Moses' parents. So let's begin in chapter 2 of Exodus, verse 1. Now a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. Now that means that both of them are descendants of Lawi, the son of Jacob or Israel. Now later, this particular division of the tribes will become the Levitical tribe or the priestly tribe, the service tribe. But that is going to happen in the Exodus itself. For the moment, they just have this tribal identity as being Levites. And so the woman conceived, and she bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. So they have this child, and by the way, his name is Amram, her name is Jochebed. They have this child, and even though the order is there that they're supposed to sacrifice him into the Nile, they refuse to do so because they see something special about him. Now, I personally think that there is some Holy Spirit intervention here that stops them from being afraid and carrying out this procedure. If you go to the book of Hebrews, I think that you can see a little bit of that aspect. Hebrews 11:23, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful. Now, the word that is used there is that there's something special of him. He is more than just the ordinary child. And so they were not afraid of the king's edict, meaning they did not carry out the order that had been put upon them. So they might have been nervous, we should understand that, but they refused to obey because they knew there was something special about Moses. Verse number 3 of Exodus 2 says, when she could hide him no longer. So 3 months, the baby is now starting to make a lot more noise. Because normally a child younger than that is going to make noise when they've got an issue, such as they need fed or they need changed. So they might be able to anticipate all of those things. But by the time we get to month three, the child is now experimenting with communication and is making all those different noises and sounds. And they realize this is not going to work. There's got to be another part of the plan that we put into place now. And I honestly do believe that what they did next was intentional. I know sometimes it's presented as accidental, that they just simply floated him away on the Nile and the princess found him. I think they thought through this plan. So she took for him a basket made of bulrushes, so out of the reeds that are there in the edge of the Nile, and they made boats out of these reeds, out of these plants. And so she would have been able to make a seaworthy, or shall we say Nile-worthy, little raft or boat. And so they daubed it with bitumen and pitch, which means they were trying to make it waterproof. So they are intentionally making a little cradle boat. And so she put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank. So she has a specific spot that she puts the floating little cradle, and she knows it's not going to go floating downstream. It's not going to disappear out into the middle of the Nile and gain the attention of some wild animal. They know this spot. Verse 4. His sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now, we know of three children in this family. There may be more that come into existence that are not talked about in Scripture, but at least we know these three. Moshe, or Moses, is the baby. 3 years older than him is Aaron. And then perhaps at least 2 or 3 years older than him, so we're talking about elementary school aged, is Miriam, who is their older sister. Here she is. So she is of the age that she can take on responsibilities, such as keeping an eye on the little floating cradle that has her baby brother in it, until he is taken in by someone of authority. Because you see, this is not going to do any good if another Israeli family finds this baby, because the baby will be expected to be thrown into the Nile because he's a boy and he's clearly been born during the time of the command. It's not really going to do any good if the baby is found by an Egyptian family that has no real power in the community, because they will immediately recognize this is one of the Hebrew babies. The order says he should have been thrown into the Nile to die, to be sacrificed. We're not in a position where we can disobey the command of the Pharaoh, so into the drink he goes. So you can see where this is going. There's really only one sort of person that is going to be able to rescue Moshe and keep him alive. And so Jochebed and Amram and young little Miriam are cooperating together to make sure that that person specifically finds this baby. And so they know that she's going to be at this exact spot on a regular basis. She has a routine. And we're talking about a princess of the Pharaoh. So verse number 5. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. Now, this might not just be simple hygiene. She might be going through some sort of religious ceremony. Because remember, the Nile is at the center of Israeli life, or excuse me, Egyptian life. And so gods and goddesses are attached to it. So while her young women walk beside the river, so her attendants are all nearby, she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. So exactly, I think, as the plan intended, she saw something different in her normal bathing spot. So she sends one of her servants to wade out there and get this thing and bring it back to shore. When she opened it, so because it's apparently closed up entirely, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. No big surprise at that, right? This is an unusual circumstance for the baby to find himself in, and so he cries about it. And then she took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrew's children." She recognizes it as a Hebrew, which any other Egyptian would have recognized as well. But she is actually in a family, the only real family, that can save this child's life and get an exception. Verse 7, "Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter," so here's Miriam, runs up, part of the plan, no doubt, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" So they know that Egyptian royalty tend to pass off responsibility for their children, the nursing and the caring, the diaper changing, all of that, to servants. This woman, Pharaoh's daughter, is also not capable of nursing the child herself, unless she was going to go through a long process of working that up, which, again, go back to square one on the other thing. The royal families tended not to be doing all of that hands-on raising of children. So the idea is offer someone who can raise the baby for her from this very moment. So Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. That'd be Jochebed. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. So he is being rescued by Pharaoh's daughter, and she will want to see him from time to time, but she is going to pay for a full-time nanny. And in the providence of God, that nanny is going to be Moses' natural mom, Jochebed. Verse 10. "When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son." So now we're talking about the process of going through weaning, getting the child up to the point where he is able to kind of provide for himself. That is, he can eat food on his own. He doesn't have to be nursed or fed. And he can take care of all his toilet habits himself, because he's potty trained now. And he is starting the communication that makes sense, talking back and forth, rapidly growing his vocabulary and his ability to converse. So that's all been taken care of during the first 3 years or so of his life. He's still been back and forth seeing his adopted mother, the daughter of Pharaoh, but he has got an awful lot of his training up to this point from his own family. The last part of verse 10 lets us know about the naming process, which happened well before the weaning took place. She named him Moshe because, she said, "I drew him out of the water." Now, there's some conflict, I think, in Jewish traditions regarding the naming of Moses. Josephus suggests that the name Moses is based on an Egyptian word for water, followed by the Egyptian word for drawing out. And if you look at some of the names of this 18th dynasty, you do see that that S-E-S ending, Amos and Tutmos, those all represent that last few sounds as meaning to flow from or come out from. And so there may be that sort of tie-in with Egyptian. However, I'm not altogether certain about the Mo part being Egyptian, because Josephus says that, I could not, in my research, find a clear-cut ancient Egyptian word for water. So I'm going to keep that search up and see whether or not I can add some authenticity to what Josephus was saying. What we do know for a fact is that in Hebrew, Moshe means to draw out just by itself. And so I think it's possible that the Pharaoh's daughter asked the Hebrew nurse, that'd be Jochebed, what's you guys' word for drawing something out of the water? Because that's what I did with him. And she would have said, well, that's the word Moshe. And she may have then said, oh, I'm going to name him Moshes. And that's how his name came about. Because we know that sometimes people have a tendency to use foreign words for some pet child that they have, because they want to tie it in with something significant from that foreign culture that they are relating to. So I think that's actually how it happened. Verse number 11. This jumps way ahead of time. And it says, one day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. Now, this jumps ahead about 40 years. And that's a lot of Moses' life. That's a third of his life that we skip over in one single verse. So I think we might want to augment that with some verses of Hebrews chapter 11, and also maybe some traditions that come out of Judaism itself. First, let's do the tradition. There is a tradition that Moses, when he was growing up as Pharaoh's daughter, was expected to act as a member of the Egyptian court. And therefore, when the Nubians, or as the ancient groups referred to them, the Ethiopians, when the Nubians, who lived to the south of Egypt and were actually part of the Egyptian, should we call it an empire, they rebelled under one of the pharaohs that followed Amenhotep the first, and I think it's Thutmose the second that had this happen. And so Thutmose sent his forces against the Nubians to pacify them, that is, to bring them back under control. And the Jewish tradition is that Pharaoh's daughter insisted that her son, her adopted son, Moshe, be one of the leaders of that invasion. In fact, the Jewish tradition is that the Egyptians believed that there was something significant about him that would allow him to do this job better than anyone else. So he went down and he put down the Nubian rebellion against the Egyptians, and in the process, the princess of Nubia, or again, as the ancient Greeks called them, the Ethiopians, or we need to substitute the Hebrew representation of that same people group, the Cushites. So this Cushite princess saw Moses, fell in love with him, or at least infatuated with him, and arrangements were made that if he would marry her, the Cushites, the Ethiopians, the Nubians, would come back under the control of the Egyptians. And so this is interesting because later we will hear about Moses having a Cushite wife. And it's not Zipporah, because she was Midian. And so this is different. So the tradition seems to be that Moses ended up getting married sometime before the incident we're about to talk about in Exodus chapter 2, which causes him to leave Egypt. Okay, so Hebrews chapter 11 now, we go to the inspired text. And it says in verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Now, the point of the Hebrews writer is that Moses was looking past his present physical situation, which was pretty cushy. He was treated as an Egyptian. He was treated as a member of the royal court because his mother, his adopted mother, was the daughter of a previous pharaoh. And he was, shall we say, a war hero for the Egyptians. He did not have to be treated as a Hebrew, but he is prompted by God's Holy Spirit to go out and to see what his fellow Hebrews are having done to them, and he does not like what he sees. He sees them being mistreated horribly just because they are Israelis. They are slaves, and they are treated as property, as animals. And Moses, on this particular day, can't stand what he's seeing. So let's read it again, Exodus 2:11. One day, when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people, he looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian. Now, I want to express my very strong opinion at this point. I do not believe that Moses murdered this man. I do not believe he premeditatedly took this life. I do believe that he intended to beat him badly, just as he was beating the Israeli. I think that he intended to exact a very harsh punishment on this man. And that's why he looks around and then he assaults him. But in the process, he ends up killing him. And so I think it was an accident. I think it would be what we call manslaughter. But he then covers it up. He hides the body in a sand dune and then goes back to wherever it is he's living, perhaps in the palace, or maybe He's got a little tent down in the Israeli area right now because he's trying to connect with his physical heritage. So verse number 13 says that when he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, "Why do you strike your companion?" So he sees two Hebrews going at it, and he can tell from the argument which one is the bad guy in the situation. And so he chews him out. He says, "What are you doing? Why are you hitting your fellow Israeli?" And then that guy answers, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us?" The prince part is definitely a slant against him being an Israeli living as an Egyptian prince. "Do you mean to kill me as you killed that Egyptian?" And then Moses was afraid and thought, surely the thing is known. He thought that he had covered up his crime, that no one had seen him do this. But, you know, there was an Egyptian missing. And some of these Israelis would have known Moses was the last guy that they saw him with, and they may have even seen him whooping on him. And so he says, "Are you going to kill me like you killed the guy yesterday?" And that's when Moses gets panicked. When Pharaoh heard of it, and I believe the Pharaoh we're talking about here is a rare Pharaoh. This is Hatshepsut, the female Pharaoh. And so when she heard of it, or he heard of it, because Pharaoh is a masculine word, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. So this is the reason and the time when Moses escaped from Egypt and went to Midian. And this is where we'll pick up tomorrow when we get back into the Word.